Live. Catch the podcast on kaya959.co.za.
Well, thank you so much for staying with us. You may have heard already that Hamas's political leader, Ismail Haniyeh, has been killed. It happened in Iran, in Iran's capital, Tehran. And on the line with us is Aisha Kaji, international relations expert. Aisha, thanks again for making time for us. Good evening and welcome.
Thanks so much. It's a very scary situation right now in the Middle East with the killing of Mr. Haniyeh. And in fact, we now have information that there's another Al Jazeera Arabic journalist just been killed
in an
Israeli airstrike in northern Gaza as well. So, you know, there have been multiple strikes in Beirut, in Iran, and in Gaza itself over the last 24 to 36 hours, all of which are pointing to extreme provocation by the Israeli military.
Aisha, tell me why the Israeli military and the Israeli government is not taking responsibility for this.
Well, I think they're trying to provoke a regional war without having to deal with the condemnation that would come with taking responsibility for this, quite frankly.
Because we are told that the Israeli media is reporting that the strike came from Iran. I mean, obviously, you can make with it what you will.
Well, actually, Iranian media and now even Turkish media and Turkish intelligence are telling us that the strike originated outside of Iran, that it was a targeted strike specifically directed at Mr. Haniyeh, who, as you know, was the political chief of Hamas.
Yeah.
And it has stoked fears of a wider escalation, really, in Israel's war, not only on Gaza, but now in the region, it appears, because this has come literally hours after the death of Hezbollah's military commander, Fuad Shukr, who was targeted in a strike on Beirut's Haret Hirek neighborhood yesterday. And as I said to you earlier, there's an Al Jazeera journalist now confirmed dead in Gaza as well. So it seems that these are very, very precision-guided strikes. I'm also hearing from my sources on the ground in Beirut that yesterday's attack included some white phosphorus, which is actually banned under international law. That is yet to be confirmed, but we know that Israel has used it in the past.
So how is Tehran, Iran itself, going to be responding to this attack?
Well, Iran's supreme religious leader, the Ayatollah, as well as the political leadership in Iran, and of course the leadership in both Gaza and Beirut, the Hezbollah leadership, have all basically said vowed revenge for these attacks. So there's threats of revenge. Certainly there's an escalation of emotions and tensions throughout the Middle East right now. And we saw how Iran retaliated against Israel, a few months ago. And there are fears that similar could happen. But it really does appear to be extreme provocation on the part of the Israeli military. And the culpability of that military funders can also not be denied. The United States has made very lukewarm, tepid comments thus far on the situation, and yet it has been funneling both arms and money to Israel, which we know has been used in the genocide in Gaza, in what the International Court of Justice calls a plausible genocide, certainly in humanitarian, in crimes under humanitarian law, crimes against humanity. And we are seeing that there's been, as I said, a very, very tepid response from Washington and other Western capitals.
So the Israeli prime minister then went to a state visit to the U.S. And of course, we are going all the way to the elections in the U.S. And we now see a Democrat, Kamala Harris, seeming like you and I spoke about it, seeming like she's gaining some momentum here. Do you think that, and I hesitate to say this because I'm not sure the answer is no, but do you think Kamala Harris's appointment, if she does succeed, it will change the politics in the West, in that region?
I unfortunately, I have to say not. Mm. I think that Mr. Trump is more likely to go out in full support of a regional war in the Middle East should he gain the presidency. But I don't think we're going to see any real change in policy from the Americans, whether it's a Republican or a Democrat who occupies the White House come January next year, you know, come the end of the results of the November 2024 elections and the inauguration, as we know, is generally in January. So I don't think we're going to see any massive change in policy. It would surprise me tremendously if we did see a change. But I think that the only issue that might gain some traction in the U.S.'s support for what is now seeming really insane tactics on the part of the Israeli administration, the only change that might come about is if the threat of complicity, of being culpable as complicit in the crime of genocide, is actually now taken up by the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice.
Well, Benjamin,
I think if that happens, then we might see a change in policy. But, you know, we have seen American support for Israel in the face of Israel's impunity. And we've also seen American impunity, this seeming, you know, attitude that international law does not apply to Israel and therefore by extension does not apply to the United States, that the United States can hold other actors on the global stage accountable but will itself not be held accountable.
And what I thought was quite interesting is during his visit, Benjamin Netanyahu's utterances that were already condemned by the UN, things that were not true about what is happening and what happened on October 7th, speaking about rapes and beheadings and so on. But he was able to reiterate that and nobody flinched.
He was able to reiterate that and then receive almost a standing ovation. You know, at least 80% of what he said in that address before Congress has actually been debunked as false or misleading. And, you know, so it appears that Mr. Netanyahu is becoming as much a purveyor of this horrible term, fake news or misinformation, as Mr. Trump was when he was president. And really, it's really disheartening to see that only a few media houses have actually called out the content of Mr. Netanyahu's speech last week in Congress, in the U.S. Congress, as being largely lacking in factual base, and in many instances has actually been proven to be not true, and that the opposite is actually happening. Those allegations that he has made towards the Palestinians of Gaza, those accusations he has made towards the Hamas regime in Gaza, those actions are actually being perpetrated as we speak. You know, the mass rapes, the beheading of babies, as we've seen live on our screens, those actions have been perpetrated by the Israeli military in Gaza. And it is ironic that those very same things, which have been proven as untrue, are still held up and, you know, used as propaganda, as false propaganda by the Israeli leader, and that he is given, as I said, applause for it rather than condemned.
Let's talk a little bit about, you know, the show of force today by Palestinians at the funeral. Well, it wasn't at the funeral itself, but they were at the West Bank specifically coming out and speaking about unity. Let's talk a little bit about that call for unity and what exactly they're asking for.
Well, you know, it's quite unusual for this kind of show of solidarity in Ramallah, particularly, you know, with Hamas, because remember, that is not a Hamas-run territory. The occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem territories are under the control of the Palestinian Authority, which has traditionally been, shall we say, somewhat at loggerheads with Hamas. And certainly politically divergent from Hamas. And yet we've seen civilians come out and protest, which also marks a shift and may also be a huge misstep in the political calculations of the Netanyahu government. Because instead of continuing to occupy a divided people, divided ideologically and politically, it appears at least that the groundswell of Palestinian support in the West Bank, as shown by these protests in Ramallah, is now becoming more and more aligned with the Palestinians in Gaza. And it may have the unintended effect of actually reuniting all Palestinians because of the atrocities being perpetrated upon them in Gaza, in Tehran, as shown with the killing of Mr. Haniyeh, in Lebanon and other parts of the Middle East, and indeed the ongoing ethnic cleansing in the West Bank.
So then, do you think it's possible? And I know, obviously, we've spoken about earlier on that the, you know, Israeli media is sort of pointing fingers at Iran and so on. But do you think that this moment may not necessarily be leading to all-out war in the region, but perhaps maybe a forcing of these other countries to unite in this moment? Do you think it's possible, or it's going to further divide them?
I think it's very possible that not only the bulk of civilian Palestinians will seek greater unity, but also that administrations in the area and military groupings in the area, both state and non-state actors, will seek to retaliate particularly against the assassination of Mr. Haniyeh, but also the attack on Beirut, which has wounded dozens of people and killed several. This is going to be seen, I think, by many in the region as really being, as I said earlier, provocative, but also being worthy of revenge. Certainly the threats of revenge have already been made in several quarters. Whether those are followed through or whether they can be dampened by political efforts remains to be seen. But I think in the coming days and weeks, we will see some form of retaliation. I think that's going to be inevitable. We just have to pray that it doesn't then lead to an all-out regional war, which appears to be what Israel is attempting to stoke.
Israel had always anyway warned that they are looking to find Mr. Haniyeh, so this was always known. Is there skepticism on how Tehran, Iran secured Mr. Haniyeh's visit?
I think there is skepticism in some quarters, but given that there appears now to be proof that the missiles that struck his place of residence while in Tehran did originate outside the country, the theory, the Israeli floated theory that this was done by Iran itself, really holds very little water, as does its attempt last week to deflect responsibility for its own missile, rebounding into occupied areas of Israel, of Palestine. So I think, more and more the general public globally, the, news reading, news viewing, news seeking public is beginning to see through Israel's propaganda as well as Israel's deliberate provocation in the region.
You spoke earlier about the Al Jazeera's journalist that was killed earlier on. It was himself and his cameraman. And I wonder, how much Al Jazeera is able to continue bringing the story live to us. I know that, Israel has banned them within Israel to continue doing this work. And they are literally losing journalists by the minute. Every single day there's a report of a journalist that's either fatally wounded or really seriously wounded. Can they still manage to keep it together after so long when no other media is able to cover the story?
I think that they have, given that they have a very good network on the ground, both in Gaza and the occupied West Bank, as well as East Jerusalem, yes, I think they will continue to try and bring us the news from those areas as unfiltered as possible, which, of course, you know, is not really brought to us by the Israeli media or many Western media outlets. Mm. But given the huge fatalities and other injuries that their journalists have endured over the past year and even earlier, whether they will be able to continue to operate remains, especially in Gaza and the occupied West Bank and East Jerusalem, remains to be seen, given that Israel has literally banned them because they tell the truth. You know, this alone should really be a huge wake-up call for consumers of media, because an administration that bans a specific media channel really needs to be interrogated as to why it's doing so, because it's going against all the precepts of free speech and democracy that Israel purportedly holds itself aligned to, and yet does the very, very opposite. You know, we've also got, essentially, we've got lots of reports of these targeted assassination against the Hezbollah commander Fuad Shukr, also injuring many, many people, including journalists, citizen journalists and professional journalists on the ground there. So there seems to be a deliberate targeting of anybody who attempts to give more than one side of the story in this region as a whole, not just in Palestine, but in the entire Middle East. And that should really raise red flags. The fact that it does not do so in Western capitals is quite frankly inexplicable to me.
Let's talk about how the region getting and finding itself in the middle of an all-out war would benefit Israel.
Well, it might not benefit the Israeli people in the medium to long term. Mm. What it might do is it might give Mr. Netanyahu and his very right-wing aligned government a new breath of life. Mm-hmm. And as we know, Mr. Netanyahu is facing both criminal and civilian charges. So the longer he can retain power and avoid being tried on those charges, the better for him politically as a politician, and the better for the current administration, which is getting to do all the extreme things it has been wanting to do for many, many years. So, you know, the likes of Minister Smoltrick, for example, and Minister Ben-Gvir, you know, who have for many years literally campaigned on and fed upon hate speech to the, towards the Palestinians. They are actually getting their dreams come true, particularly with this all-out genocide in Gaza, as well as the ethnic cleansing in the West Bank. And we've seen, by the way, that Hezbollah leader Hassan Nasrallah is poised to give an address tomorrow in Lebanon. And that's not only about the new funeral of Fuad Shukr, it's one of its leaders who was killed in the attack on Beirut, but also on this assassination of Mr. Haniyeh and the general situation that's escalating in this region.
So how long can Netanyahu be using all these tactics to survive politically for? I know that, yes, it has bolstered his very right-wing, it's not his because it's a coalition government, that very right-wing government. But in Israel itself, how long can he survive this for? Is the citizenry of Israel, you know, okay with what's happening? Are they not getting more? Initially, it seemed like they were, you know, quite supportive of him. But does he still hold that support on the ground?
Well, you know, this is a really tough question, because on the one hand, we've seen massive demonstrations in the capital, the so-called capital of Israel, Tel Aviv, calling for a ceasefire, calling for Netanyahu to step down, etc. On the other hand, we've seen massive civilian support for atrocities such as, you know, the gang rapes and multiple rapes committed on Palestinian prisoners in the notorious Israeli prison. And just last week, we've seen attempts by civilians, Israeli civilians, to actually overrun those prisons and, you know, the attempts to charge the military officers responsible for these multiple rapes, etc. So, you know, it seems to be quite a schizophrenic society right now. On the one hand, they don't want human rights upheld when it comes to abuses against Palestinians. On the other hand, many are calling for a ceasefire. Mm. So it seems like Israeli society is either very, very confused or very, very divided into two very distinct camps. And really, you know, depending on who you speak to, you get very different stories.
And would we say that the voices of the families of those who are abducted is being drowned out? Because that no longer seems to be the big discussion point. You only hear it from families. But, you know, when Israel speaks, that doesn't come through very much anymore.
No, it came through a bit during Mr. Netanyahu's state visit to the U.S. We saw, you know, his attempt to use the families of hostages or freed hostages, etc., Israeli hostages I'm talking about, in an attempt to bolster his cause. And I think in some quarters, certainly amongst the American civilian population, that backfired. Because it is now more and more evident that while, yes, Hamas does have you know, a certain number of hostages, Israeli hostages captured on October 7th, still under in captivity, what has also come to light in the past almost a year now and has become very, very glaringly evident is that Israel is holding thousands of Palestinian hostages under inhumane conditions. They call them prisoners, but really they are detainees who have been held without trial, without possibility of trial, including hundreds of children. And if those are not hostages in a similar sense, then what are they?
Aisha Kaji, thank you so much for your time, international relations expert, and thank you for that. This is on the back of the killing of the political leader of Hamas overnight, Ismail Haniyeh, and what we are going to be seeing already, what you're seeing in the West Bank, for instance, just throngs and throngs of people who are out in the streets calling for unity. It seems to be a very big moment because everybody, I think, is quite anxious about what could be happening in that region.
If you missed it live, catch the broadcast on kaya959.co.za.